To Yemen now, the country neighboring Saudi Arabia that's on the verge of collapse. Despite calls for a ceasefire, fighting actually escalated in some areas over the weekend. More than 150 fighters from both the rebel and government-backed sides were killed. As we've reported, Yemen was first racked by internal struggle when the rebel Houthis toppled the government. But it's now a proxy war, with a Saudi-led coalition backed by the U.S. fighting the Houthis, who are supported by Iran, and are also fighting the former government forces. And that fighting hasn't let up, despite a recent photo of a starving 7-year-old, her ribs stretching her skin. A week ago, readers were profoundly affected by her picture on the front page of the New York Times. The end of the week, they learned she died. Tyler Hicks took that picture for a story by reporter Declan Walsh, who joins us now on Skype from Cairo. And Declan, you only knew this girl and her family briefly, but I still feel the need to say, you know, sorry for your loss. But what was it like to see the impact she made over this very short arc that she had with readers?
Well, we were overwhelmed by the reaction from readers. So many people wrote in. They wanted to know more about her. They wanted to help her directly if they could. They wanted to follow up on her case. And as you said, when we did that, tragically, we discovered that Amal Hussein had actually died just around the time we published the original story. Mm-hmm. And for me, really, you know, this was a sign that Amal Hussein's story is just one among hundreds of thousands in Yemen. But I think that certainly for our readers and for many people, the scale of the suffering and of the catastrophe in Yemen is often hard to grasp. Mm-hmm. So when it is filtered, if you like, through the one very tragic story of one child, it really helps people to understand what's going on with so many other people in Yemen at the same time.
Yeah. Well, this is what Lise Doucette said on Friday as well, that this, you know, this has happened. Traditionally, a refugee child gets washed up on the shore and suddenly eyes are focused there. You know, the fear is that then eyes will then turn away. But right now, people are still questioning what is going on in Yemen. Remind us how this happened. She was a displaced person.
That's right. Amal's parents or Amal's family had come from another part of the country that was one of the first areas to be subjected to the Saudi-led coalition's campaign of aerial bombardment when it started about 3 years ago. That's also the homeland of the Houthi movement that now controls northern Yemen that the Saudis are fighting against. So her family were displaced from their home about 2 or 3 years ago when their area was bombed. They were forced to move to this other area where we found her. And there they found refuge in what, by all accounts, was a very shabby refugee camp with very poor facilities. They don't live in a tent. They live in a sort of a shelter that's made from sheet plastic sheeting and sticks and so on. And, you know, like many people in that area, their resources have become progressively more and more strained. So you had both the impact of the war over the last couple of years, bringing ever more people into these areas and placing ever more strain on the very meager facilities that are there to cope with the refugees. And then over the last while, you've had this really severe economic crunch in the country where the prices have been skyrocketing and really pushing food beyond the most basic foodstuffs, beyond the reach of many people. And what that means is for people like her family who are already living on the edge, that starts to push them over that edge.
Well, the UN says 13 million people are in danger of starving. That's 13 million Amals. But in reading your recent reporting on what happened, it's sickening because she made it to a hospital because of this, you know, imminent death and her illness and her obvious starvation. That hospital wanted her to go to a Doctors Without Borders hospital about 15 miles away. But her mother told you what, they couldn't?
That's right. Like so many people, they just simply didn't have the money to make the journey. Amal was discharged a few days after we met her. She had made some modest improvements, but the doctors wanted to send her on. But the mother said, look, we are out of cash. And so even though it was only 15 miles away, she said she did not have the money for that fare. So she brought Amal back to their home. And tragically, 2 or 3 days later after that, apparently, we later learned while the mother was making a fresh effort to try and take her to a hospital, Amal died.
Yeah. I mean, for want of gasoline, which is, you know, price has risen 50%, you can't get 15 miles. Look, a couple of questions there. The photographs, Tyler's photographs are, as usual, incredible. Your reporting partner here. I'm looking at one. Amal is lying on the bed, this, you know, tiny stick figure. And there's a child sitting next to her in her mother's lap who you know, looks full-bodied. Do we know why one child starves and another doesn't?
Well, appearances can be deceptive. Sometimes children who are malnourished actually have swollen bellies, so it can be hard to tell at first glance. Secondly, the way that malnutrition works in some of these families is that it may just affect the weakest child first, or a child may become malnourished and then fall, as Amal did, into a cycle of sickness and hunger. So the hunger or the lack of nutrition breaks down defenses, then you get sick, and then it becomes a cycle that leads you into this spiral that for some young children can end in death. So it doesn't affect all children equally, and that's why it can be, Yemen can be a confusing place when you are going to look at the humanitarian situation. Because firstly, when you arrive in a town, you will see supermarkets that are full of food, and then you'll see many, many beggars on the streets who are looking, begging for alms. And you realize that the problem is not the lack of food in the country, it's that very few people can afford to buy it. Similarly, when you go into the hunger wards, you will see children in a terrible condition, like Amal. Then you will see their mothers, who are, for the most part, certainly when they're visitors, fully veiled. And some aid workers described to me this is the hidden part of the famine. Many of these women are also severely malnourished, but it is not apparently evident to the eye because, for cultural reasons, they just can't be photographed or seen in public.
Look, Declan, just remind us how we got here. The Houthis, who we, as we said, first toppled the government and are now fighting a Saudi-led coalition, primarily Saudi Arabia. The Houthis backed by Iran. The Houthis were once royalty in this country, you understand? We don't expect you to take us through all the history, but we would tell people to read your colleague Robert Worth's New York Times Magazine story yesterday, Can Yemen Survive Saudi Arabia's War? It's pretty incredible. But before the Houthis toppled the government, there was a fear on the part of Saudi Arabia that people within Yemen were turning more towards Iran and a Shiite Islam as opposed to the Sunni Islam that Saudi Arabia embraces. And that the seeds of where we are now, some of the seeds are there.
That's right. So, look, the Houthis are a guerrilla movement that had first rose against the central government in Yemen back in 2004. But they really rose to prominence in the aftermath of the Arab Spring. And as they rose to prominence after 2011, they received help from Iran. And that is really what prompted the Saudi intervention in 2015. You had this new defense minister who had just been appointed, Mohammed bin Salman. He's now the crown prince and the most powerful man in Saudi Arabia. And he really sort of announced himself on the regional, if not the world stage, by starting this very aggressive intervention in Yemen against what he saw as a proxy for Saudi Arabia's great regional rival, Iran.
Well, look, the focus is also on the crown prince bin Salman because of his assumed and alleged ordering of the killing of Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi in Istanbul. Is there any sense that that can be used as leverage, you know, to get him to perhaps back off just a bit as what was a war in Yemen is now a humanitarian crisis?
The death of Khashoggi sort of swung a very sharp spotlight on Saudi Arabia's actions abroad. So I think that the death of Khashoggi, combined with the rapidly deteriorating humanitarian crisis in the country, have combined, if you like, in the last month to give rise to this sudden Western momentum for a move for peace from the U.S. Defense Secretary Jim Mattis, from Mike Pompeo, and even today from the British Foreign Secretary Jeremy Hunt, who said that he sees a window for peace in Yemen, and there have been calls for a ceasefire within the next 30 days. But all of that is in sharp contrast to what we see going on the ground, as you mentioned in your introduction, in the last couple of days. So it seems like there's two very different tracks going on at the moment in terms of what's being said in public and what's going on the ground.
Well, Declan Walsh, New York Times reporter, along with your colleague Tyler Hicks, the photographer, we want to thank you for also shining a light on Yemen. Thank you.
Thank you.